Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's sending up Hail Marys about Texas players in the draft, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Good. As we record this on Monday night, we're in a precarious position where I always root for Longhorns to go and get theirs, make their money, come to UT to go play at the next level. But I wouldn't hate if some guys got drafted a little bit lower in the MLB draft. And decided to come back and win a national championship next year and then go even higher in the following year. Of course, this could all change by the time, you know, tomorrow morning's draft rolls around. I think we're through 10 rounds or so now, and there's a couple big names still on the board. Tanner Witt, LeBaron Johnson, et cetera. We'll get into that. We'll break down once the draft completes and we have all the news for you. We have one big prospect coming to the 40, one big prospect getting drafted and going, likely signing with the majors again as we record this on Monday. So news breaking will be coming in baseball. It's the off season, but things are still happening. And there's still a lot to talk about, Gerald. This is honestly, out of the previews, this is one I'm most excited. I was a receiver. This is exciting for me. The pass catchers is always fun.
So we'll definitely have our MLB draft recap / how does this impact the University of Texas on Thursday as part of our normal Thursday show. We're working out some scheduling stuff with our BYU friends, new friends of the podcast. So we're having to coordinate some schedules, time zones, and whatnot. So this week we may get two position previews. We may get tonight's wide receiver preview and an offensive line preview. You'll find out when we find out, but we'll talk more about that as it comes. But today we're going to preview the pass catchers. We're going to roll in wide receivers and tight ends, because let's be honest, in Sark's offense, tight ends catch more passes, as many passes, we'll say, as they spend time blocking. We'll also talk about a bunch of Big 12 preseason awards, both for the football and the volleyball team. Big recruiting news as well, and the baseball staff. David Pierce going full Thanos on it and making some calls there. But we'll start with the pass catchers. Kyle, this is another position where, and maybe less so than last week, Texas has a ton of talent, and we're not necessarily sure what the floor is for, right? We know what the ceiling is for this group. The ceiling is astronomical. The ceiling is ridiculous, but we don't necessarily know where the floor is. We've seen some really high highs from guys like Xavier Worthy and Jordan Whittington. We've seen the floor too as well, and the floor is kind of pretty low depending on who's healthy, who's catching balls, and things like that. We also don't know what A.D. Mitchell's going to look like in burnt orange. You know what he looked like in a Georgia Bulldogs uniform. Isaiah Nayor has yet to step on a field for a legitimate Texas football game. Casey Kane, a young guy who had some struggles early but came on big in the bowl game. And it's a lot of incoming freshmen. Kyle, there is a massive bevy of talent. Don't forget JT Sanders at tight end. Texas has a legit two deep at every spot on wide receiver. They've got, you know, obviously JT Sanders at tight end. Gunnar Helm is going to demand some attention, I think, with his blocking, and he'll get some chances in passing game because of it. But are there enough balls to go around in Austin for this passing game?
Yes, is the answer, right? And we just did our running back preview and made some ambitious goals laid out for the running back room at the University of Texas in 2023. But this offense, this team, honestly, will be as successful as, like Gerald said, this group takes them. This is the highest that they'll soar. We'll talk in some of our defensive previews about the positions that may end up being the difference in you know, 8-9 wins or 10-11 wins, right? But this group is expected to honestly be the engine, right? The passing game this year should be the engine. So is there enough balls to go around? I mean, the simple answer is yes, right? In the year that we use to describe what offense can look like, in the year that, you know, modern offense was really kind of defined with, you know, a quarterback who can do what he can do, with a great group of receivers, with a running back who's dynamic, start calling the plays, like the idea of what we want this Texas offense to be, one of the greatest offenses of all times, that Alabama team with Mac Jones at quarterback. They threw it 402 times. I wish it was 400, be a nice even number, but 402 times for 4,500 yards. So you get nice even numbers, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. That's obviously remarkable efficiency, right? Take the Mac Jones, you know, efficiency out of it. They threw the ball 400 times. The interesting thing when you ask the question, are there enough balls to go around? They had the top end. They had one guy get 128 catches. That's a lot. That's a lot of catches. They had their next two receivers have 55 and 28. All three of those numbers went in the first round. Also, their running back had 43 catches. So that's a lot of balls going to different players. I don't know that any player on Texas's team is going to break 100 catches. I just don't see this room looking like that. I could see a lot, multiple dudes getting in that 55 range. Like, that would make a lot of sense to me. There might be some guys who make really, really good use, impactful use of the 28 to 35 catches range, right? When we run down this, right, the thing to think about is you have Xavier Worthy healthy and in a different position, just not necessarily a different position, running maybe a different route tree than he has in the past, with Jordan Whittington also doing what he does, which is move the chains, do the dirty work, be underneath, you know, be a playmaker, be a running back with the ball in his hands after he gets it. And then you have Nayor and A.D. Mitchell stretching things out over the top, two true legitimate deep threats, right? Remember, both in theory, SEC flips, right? Nayor was committed to Tennessee when Texas, the lesser UT, when Texas flipped him to the 40 acres. And A.D. Mitchell, you know, he's kind of a guy who shows up when he wants to, like in college football playoff games, basically, and just makes the biggest plays on the biggest stage. And so, you know, he came to Texas. Is it because he wants to be more featured, or does he still say, look, yeah, let a lot of people play short on Whittington underneath because he's eating them up on third downs, and Worthy when he's coming across trying to keep two eyes on him, and I'll just run past people and catch long touchdowns. Oh, and you can't double me either because there's Nayor on the other side who can run past people for touchdowns. So it really is the perfect shape of an offense where you can run all kinds of different things underneath and over top and double crossers. And, you know, Sark will always just, it is in his DNA, have pre-snap motion, eye distraction. Like, his whole thing is hunting matchups, distracting defense, unsettling them pre-snap, waiting to see if you can, you know, stress them enough to break them, and then have game-breaking players go and execute on top of that. So it is a bit of an upgrade, right? I'm not going to sit here and badmouth any player who's played for the Texas Longhorns, but last year, after Xavier Worthy, who, you know, for at least half the season was single-handed, Milton, Brennan Thompson, and Casey Kane were kind of the next three wide receiver options. So without a doubt, or excuse me, after Whittington as well, without a doubt, there is an upgrade in talent that's available for Ewers.
I want to backtrack to a couple of things you said. One, I think it's good that you mentioned, you didn't mention him, but you mentioned his statistics, right? The Devontae Smith year, when he won the Heisman back in 2020, that was part of the selling point for Xavier Worthy to come play with Sark, when he had the admissions issues at Michigan and kind of reopened things and got out of his LOI. And he was already considering Texas under Tom Herman, and then Sark got in the mix and kind of waved the, hey, I just had a wide receiver that's very similar to you win the Heisman, right? The only wide receiver of the last, or the only like non-quarterback since 2015, right? And one of two, I think, in the last 20 years, maybe 20 almost, yeah, back to Reggie Bush. So 2006, right? Reggie Bush, Mark Ingram, and Derrick Henry right before that. So not a ton of non-quarterbacks winning the Heisman. And I just did it right in my offense with not just Devonta Smith in there, but names you might recognize, John Mechie. Right, a guy who's playing on Sundays. Jalen Waddle, a guy who's playing on Sundays. Oh, Najee Harris. Jaleel Billingsley, a guy who played in Texas for a year and then didn't quite manage. But we'll not talk about that. But I think that's something to talk about, right, is that part of the selling point of this offense for Xavier Worthy was Devontae Smith in that role that he can have in the offense. And part of what made Devontae Smith successful, obviously his natural skills, but also, like, you have to cover John Mechie or he's going to kill you. You have to cover Jalen Waddle. He only played in six games and had 600 yards. He had 100 yards a game, 4 receptions a game for 100 yards, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. So, and part of the issue, I think, last year was that Texas was like, kind of like had maybe 1 3/4 options on any given pass play. Like, it was really easy to dial in on Xavier Worthy, especially when you saw him running down the field, running, frankly, a route that doesn't necessarily suit his skill set. Yeah, you should be able to catch those deep balls and place them, but like, Xavier Worthy is best when you make him in a cornerback play in a phone booth, and I'll take Xavier Worthy. I'll take the guy running forward over the guy running backwards 10 times out of 10 when they're playing in a phone booth, right? So the fact that you have Worthy, you have Whittington back, and then you add A.D. Mitchell and Isaiah Nayor to the mix, right? That's probably your top four guys. Defenses can't key on him as much as they did before. And so you roll a safety over the top of Worthy and say, okay, make one of your other receivers beat us. That's how they did it last year. They're not necessarily going to be able to do that, because if you do that, then a guy, like you said, A.D. Mitchell, who is a deep threat, who has been a deep threat in national championship situations, a guy like Isaiah Nayor, who we thought was going to be wide receiver one last year, basically, or 1A before the injury, those two guys will run past you. Kasey Kane, I don't know if Kasey Kane in the bowl game is the real Kasey Kane, but if that is the real Kasey Kane, nobody should be that big and that fast, right? That is a freak of an athlete, and I think he's going to be absolutely incredible. Oh, and not to mention, you've got Jonte Cook, Ryan Niblett, and DeAndre Moore on the bench, who Jonte Cook, legitimate deep threat. Ryan Niblett is your prototypical, like, quick slot guy or kind of inside receiver. DeAndre Moore can kind of do it all, almost. So for Texas, I think you're looking at a group that will always have or should have fresh bodies, right? You can have a group that rotate guys in and out. You can take a guy off to have a couple of plays off and let somebody rest up. Or if Xavier Worthy's having an off night, oh, Whittington's there, Mitchell's there, Nayor's there, one of these seven other guys is there. Oh yeah, and we haven't mentioned him,
right?
JT Sanders, aka Campbell's Bane, JT Sanders. If you don't get that reference, JT Sanders is the reason why Matt Campbell got real mad during last year's game. But JT Sanders is a guy who probably won't be off the field many plays and many snaps next year. So, like, you add that layer onto it, I feel really good about this wide receiver group.
Your first question you asked is, are there enough balls to go around? And so I think now that you're talking the whole pass catchers, right, the tight ends included, you saw a lot of 12 personnel last year. You saw a lot of two tight ends. And Gunnar Helm is you know, slotted in to be our second tight end after Sanders. But last year, that second tight end was really Andre Karich, right? Like, it's easy to forget. He was the guy who was on the field, you know, 70% of our plays, basically to help a young line with pass blocking, right? And really, again, I don't think Sark gets enough credit. Like, if they would have won a couple of those close games, and last year was a 10-win season, I think there would have been a lot more national attention paid to that little wrinkle where you take a left tackle, give him a tight end jersey, and basically have a max protect type situation. They ran 12 personnel, but really, I don't even know what you call this personnel. They ran a 6 offensive lineman personnel set, which is you know, innovative, right? Like, that's Sark. That's what you're going to get. Like, here's what I have. Here's what the problem I need to solve. Let's try this other thing. Now, does that take away from some of the, like we talked about, the you know, if you're running max protect, basically, yeah, it makes a lot of heave and throws that you know, isn't typical Sark offense. So I think they're going to come out 11 personnel a lot this year. Helm may come in, you know, for some snaps, right? Like, he had a nice 19-yard catch in the bowl game. Another guy who showed up late, but he's played a lot in his career, but hasn't really been featured. There may be times when he's there. He's a good blocker, so he may be in short yardage or goal line situations for sure. But really, you're going to see a base 11 personnel more often than not, right? And again, when I talked about it, Najee Harris had 43 catches that year with those three first-round wide receivers. So a Sark offense featuring Bijan and Roshan out of the backfield and Keelan Robinson out of the backfield, we talked about in our preview last week, again, not a is a feature, not a bug, right? You are going to see the running backs get you know, involved. That's just going to be a part of it. But the idea that a Texas offense, you just talked about the people who are going to be downfield, your Nayor, Mitchell, Xavier Worthy in any given play. The idea that you run those guys off and people have to go with them because those are three players capable of taking any pass to the house, that underneath you could, in theory, have one of Texas's talent running backs, you know, somewhere in a short flat. You could have Jordan Whittington sitting at the chains and JT Sanders doing anything, right? He can also go deep. He can burn you in the seam. He can, you know, he can absolutely run, you know, screens, which we've done in the past, right? Like, where you give it to him at the line and let him get yak. He had a couple of long ones called back on holdings, but still had a ton of yak last season. Like he's tight ends. This is new, right? Not your grandfather's tight end. This is tight ends in today's age, even though they don't split out quite as much as you did in Herman's offense, where it was really just another receiver. Many times this is still, a tight end 2.0 that you see in Jatavion Sanders, a guy who, you know, will burn you down the seam, will run a nice crisp, you know, out route and get open, can sit down quickly and has, you know, what they described as the best hands on the team last year. So just strong hands to go up and catch balls in the air, can jump, you know, is good. There's the videos of him in high school making one-handed catches over people in the end zone. Like, just has all the skills, tools to do it. There's a reason, you know, he's one of the top two tight ends in this draft, and really just because Brock Bowers is generational, you know, is even the question why he's one of two. But they legitimately could be two first-round tight ends in this draft, right, with Jatavion Sanders and Brock Bowers with Georgia. So, you know, it's he really is a special talent. Don't think of it just as a Jay Novacek, who I love, Jay, but the guy who, you know, give me 6 yards and just hang underneath. He can be another one of those deep guys. But again, the fact that you do have him and Whittington working underneath with those other guys, right? The amount of packages and options that opens up, right? There are times that they can go empty and get another receiver out there. They can keep Sanders on the field and, you know, flex him out and go four or five wide. Like they can do all of those things because they're deep enough to do it. And I think, like, again, it shouldn't be forgotten that Isaiah Nair has never averaged less than 20 yards a catch in his career. Like, he's a deep threat. He's a guy who's fast and huge and goes up and gets balls, right? There's you know, a reason that every Georgia fan I've talked to is like, well, you can't really complain because we won two national championships, but that A.D. Mitchell thing really hurt, right? That hurt them. They were banking on him. He was, you know, he's had some injuries last year, but the year before he played 53% of their snaps. No Georgia receiver played, you know, more than 50, right? He was their number one receiver in 2021, right? He's SEC freshman of the week a couple times that year. He's a guy who they were banking on, you know, in the post Stetson Bennett world. But anyways, you add that with Jordan Whittington coming back, right? He came back for a reason. You know, he's a great blocker, but he's also looking at Sunday NFL money. He loves the Longhorns and he wants to spend more time with Bevo. Love that about him. But he's got something to say, right? There's contract years all across this group. Yeah, Xavier Worthy wants to be playing on Sundays. Jordan Whittington came back so that he can better prepare himself for Sundays. A.D. Mitchell came to Texas, more spotlight, you know, go be the, you know, a featured guy, play more big games like he did at Georgia, but, you know, do them for the University of Texas, where you're from, Texas, and go play on Sundays, right? Isaiah Nair came to Texas. He looked between Tennessee and Texas because he wanted to play for a big school to get put on the map to go play on Sundays. I don't know that Jatavion Sanders lasts more than this year, so enjoy it while you got him. That's a bunch of Sunday guys, right? That's a bunch of guys looking to break out. Like, they're not going to be fighting for the ball, but they're all going to be trying to make the most of it every time they get it.
I mean, again, it's a good problem to have, right? If you got a guy who's trying to one-up, and this it very much seems like a rising tide raises all ships situation. So I want to ask this question before we move on to our close on this, but there's been this, like, rumbling, right? We mentioned it a little bit, that Xavier Worthy as a Heisman dark horse, right? He's a guy who's not getting much love, much talk. But again, Sark sold him on this offense on the Devonta Smith plan. Devonta Smith, again, one of four people to win, non-quarterbacks to win the Heisman in the last two decades. Do you buy the hype? Do you think Xavier Worthy is going to have that big of a season for Texas?
Here's the thing, right? Like, think about Worthy had 60. He's had 60 catches every year that he's been here, right? He had a few more drops his sophomore year, and we've heard some of the explanation for that. He was a little more banged up, for sure. But his freshman year, 62 catches, 981 yards, 12 touchdowns. Like, think about that as an intro to college football. The way that people just couldn't stay in front of him. The way that balls went in the air and he separated from people. If we can get that version, right? Like, if you're a guy who, and again, you assume in your career you're getting better every year. But let's say you start with your freshman year and we're going to get better now from that. And those numbers go up to 75 catches with healthy hands. And, you know, if he had 60 for 760 and 9 touchdowns last year, he was a few drops and a few plays away from that number being 70 catches, you know, 900 yards and 12 touchdowns, right? Like, he should have a couple catches in places where they, you know, balls could have been a little different. He could have held on to it either way. could have been there. So just think about that trajectory going up, right? If he's in the 70s and he's over 1,000 and he's got 12 plus touchdowns again, you know, maybe more, maybe 14 touchdowns, he could have games. And you've seen it. He could have games where he has 200 yards and four touchdowns in it. Like, he's that good. And if it's the right matchup and defenses are you know, saying we're going to man up every one of these receivers and they're going one-on-one against Xavier Worthy, he could have games that will launch him into the Heisman conversation. Do I think it's going to happen? No. I really honestly do not. I don't think it's realistic. Like, could he play himself into a first-round wide receiver? Yes, he has incredible talent. When we say he's tiny, like, he's not big and bulky, but he's 6'1". Like, he's not miniature. He is big enough to play in the modern NFL where guys, you know, like Tyreek Hill, who are, you know, significantly smaller than him, have thrived. Xavier Worthy has great speed, great separation. You know, it's just the couple little things. I think he can play himself for sure this season into being a first-round draft pick. Heisman, I mean, go prove me wrong, X. I would love it, but because there is so much talent, I think the ball will get spread around a little bit more. I don't think he's going to get 120 catches like Devonta Smith did. Again, that took Jaylen Waddle getting hurt. Jaylen Waddle was expected to be the best, and some would argue was the best receiver on that roster, right? So, I mean, it took an injury to really launch Devonta Smith to that level, but he was just so unguardable for the second half of that season. Again, go prove me wrong, Xavier Worthy. He has the talent to do it. I firmly believe that. Do I think it's realistic? No, I don't think so. But, man, what a great season it would be if that turns out to even remotely be the case.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have a special season, right? 1,800 yards is absolutely ridiculous. And you're right, it did take Jaylen Waddle getting hurt. Or I think that number would not have been as high coming into the season because Jaylen Waddle's just freaking Jaylen Waddle, right? So let's do it. Prediction time. Preseason Podstradamus. Say that 5 times fast. Kyle, who is your leading receiver for 2023? This one's probably not very hard.
Yeah, after I just spent time saying why it wasn't Heisman winner Xavier Worthy, it's going to be Xavier Worthy, right? And if it's not, man, I'm excited. And not for an injury sense, but I'm excited to see who the next guy up is, because I think the more interesting question is who's the second leading receiver.
That's a good question. My leading receiver, X, easy. I think it's a very easy question.
Who's your number two?
Number two, I think I'm going to go a little bit of a dark horse.
Okay.
I'm going to say Whittington. I think my head wants me to say A.D. Mitchell or Isaiah Nayor, but my heart really thinks that Jordan Whittington is going to be... There's something to be said about being the third down guy for a quarterback.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about the, you know, underneath 6 yards and, you know, 6 yards or 5 yards or, you know, get to the sticks kind of guy. And that's Jordan Whittington, right? That is what he is. That's what he does. And, Jordan Whittington was a guy who played his freshman year because we didn't think he'd be here for longer than 3 years. And now it's 6 years later and he's still here. So I think he's going to have a really big season if he's going to deliver on the NFL hopes that he had coming here, you know, 6 years ago, when he led the Gobblers to a, you know, state championship on both sides of the ball and won MVP on both sides of the ball. He's going to have that big of a year if he's going to want to see his future in the NFL be anything, right? I think he's probably, that window is very slim, if not already closing shut on him. But I think there's an opportunity for him if he has a big year and he shows, like, you know, I've still got a lot of tread on the tires. The injuries, you know, the injuries sucked, but that's not who I am. This is who I am. So I really think it is a contract year. It's a career year, really, for Jordan Whittington.
I love that. I would love that to be true. One of my just favorite Longhorns in the past few years. Like, after Roshan left, he might be my favorite Longhorn on this roster. I really like Whittington a lot as a person, as a player, his tenacity, his ability to sell out for his teammates. Like, I pray health over him this season because I would like that to come true. I think for me, the answer is JT Sanders. Cause I think
that was my next one, by the way.
I'd easily see a season where Nayor and Mitchell both have 600 plus yards, right? Like they are big threats. Maybe they get 30, 40 catches, you know, each. And because of their big stretch the field guys, they get to 600 yards. But I'm talking our number two receiver is going to be way higher than that, right? 600 yards felt like, when I watched JT Sanders in big games, it's like, wow, it was only 600 last year, 613. Like, it felt like he had 700 or 800 last year because the threat he always had. So I see an easy, like, I see him getting to 800 yards this year, 900 yards. Like, he just has that in his bag. I just want to say, if there is an injury, if there is something, if for whatever reason he's just so good that he makes these guys we've just spent 20, 30 minutes talking about not see the field, there's a world where Jonte Cook has the talent to step in and be our second leading receiver. And I am not saying that, you know, to disparage any of the other guys we just spent time praying, but like, people who watched him play in high school on 7-on-7s, like, I've talked to coaches and just say he's different. He's in camps against the best cornerbacks in the country, just embarrassing them. Like, Evan Stewart, you know, we loved the kid, wanted him, you know, to come to Texas at some point, like, saw what he could do even in that terrible Aggie offense. Now, he was, you know, the main threat, but Jonte Cook in a different situation can easily do that as a freshman. Now, do I think when we're doing this preview next year, we're going to be talking a lot about Jonte Cook because he's going to be the guy next year? But I think he has that talent. And I've heard people talk in the most glowing terms about DeAndre Moore. I'm not as familiar with this game, but people who watched him at the high school level would say, any other school, any other year, you're talking about who are your potential impact freshmen? It's like DeAndre Moore. So it's crazy the amount of talent, right? Like, you know, if Casey Kane takes that step forward, we didn't even talk about him like as a fifth or sixth receiver in this group. Like, there's talent up and down this. So it could be anyone, but I do think the top end, the biggest names are Xavier Worthy and JT Sanders, each of them, you know, inching close to 1,000 yards and, you know, Jordan Whittington getting his, but also, you know, he's out there lead blocking for these guys. So he's, you know, he's doing it all. And the one thing we didn't talk about, Gerald, by the way, JT Sanders was an incredible blocker last year. And I did not see that coming. I didn't see that coming. We knew he was an athlete. We thought he should play DN, and he said, no, I'm going to play tight end. And we definitely see that he was right. But I didn't think he had this in the bag. And credit to Jeff Banks, credit to, you know, whichever staff member was working directly with him on that. But, you know, Mike Golick Jr., who you should be following on social media or anything that he does because he's great, went back and was watching some Texas offense and specifically was calling out JT Sanders, right? And there's a Baylor game where they just went like in a you know, tight wing basically and ran off JT Sanders' butt to close that game out in the fourth quarter. A, because you had the running backs to do it, but B, because he was just blowing people back. And so when we talk about Sanders being a complete tight end, it is all the tools to be a receiving, you know, god, but he's a complete tight end.
Yeah, he is absolutely somebody who can play all the jobs at tight end, and so we love to have it. So our number two receivers, Kyle said JT Sanders, I said Jordan Whittington. So again, Podstradamus, extra points on the line. But we'll be back on Thursday either with a BYU preview or an offensive line preview, depending on how schedules align. But keep with us as we preview the Texas Longhorns and their opponents for 2023. Now is a part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. It's going to be a lot of football off the top, though. We'll start with the Big 12 preseason awards. The Big 12 media days are right around the corner. They are on Wednesday as well. But ahead of that, we got the Big 12 preseason poll where Texas finished atop it for the first time since 2009. 41 of the 67 first-place votes were placed for Texas. Additionally, Texas led the conference with 5 on the all-conference team, leading all other schools. Wide receiver Xavier Worthy leads the contingent as the only unanimous selection of the bunch. Joining him on the list is tight end Jatavion Sanders, offensive lineman Kelvin Banks, DL Byron Murphy, one of just 4 players on the whole list that was not on the postseason list last year, and linebacker Jalen Ford, who was also selected as your preseason defensive player of the year. Kyle, I hate the hype. The hype makes me terrified, but I'm starting to feel like everybody agrees with us, and I hope Texas can finally freaking deliver on the hype.
Yeah, this is the year. I mean, we've talked about it. It's the talent is there. The talent necessarily isn't everywhere else. I do think, I will say, Xavier Worthy, deservedly so. I love people recognizing that, you know, he's going to bounce back in a big way. But I was a little surprised. Like, players like Cooper Beebe from Kansas State, like, I don't think there's another guard in the conference who's as good as him. He was a surprise to not be unanimous. There's some other good players for sure. We did our Kansas State preview, and I mean, there's some good players on that team without a doubt. We've done a couple previews, you know, half or a third of the previews so far, and there's some good players in this conference. I do think Texas is the most stacked roster, and I do think it is you know, pretty head and shoulders above everyone else. I think, you know, Texas having three on offense is fair, but I really like, you know, they have two on defense, and that doesn't even account some of the, you know, some of the freshmen who could have an incredible impact, some of the transfers who could come in and have something to say. There's no secondary represented here, which maybe, you know, if you want to talk about snubs, there's a Jahdae Barron-sized hole, or, you know, some people like Jaron Thompson for that, or, you know, maybe Jalen Catalan has something to say. I think by the end of it, you know, if Texas secondary, we'll talk about that group, but maybe has a bit of a chip on their shoulder here, but who doesn't, and or who probably does, because he deserves to have one, is Jalen Ford, a man who finally recognized he should have been the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year last year, was snubbed, gets the preseason pick. I'm excited for the year that man's going to have. The way that he hits just feels different.
I think Jalen Ford is going to be the preseason, postseason Defensive Player of the Year. Neither A.D. Mitchell nor Jalen Catalan being, and there's reasons why they weren't the newcomer, right, the preseason newcomers for whatever reason. But I think with an offensive and defensive newcomer of the year, I think either one of them could end up with one of those awards when it's all said and done. I think there's going to be another one on defense, and I think you're right. It's probably going to be somebody from the secondary, right? Like, what does Jahdae Barron have to do for these people to freaking recognize him? I hope this kid is, like, just pissed. I hope he's, like, he looks at the list, and he's like, you know what? Snub me again. I'm going to have more pick sixes. I'm going to have more tackles for loss. I'm going to lead the conference to tackles for loss because you guys made me so mad. Unleash that beast. I'm hoping to see it. Speaking of beasts, Texas picked up not one but two commitments this past week. We got four-star tight end Jordan Washington, who committed on the 4th of July, and then four-star athlete Aaron Hampton, Aaron Bubba Hampton, as he likes to call himself, both committed to Texas. Washington fits that JT Sanders mold, not necessarily the athletic upside, but the size and the kind of the skill set. Obviously, nobody, there's one JT Sanders in the world, and his name is JT Sanders. But Aaron Hampton's a guy who has an opportunity to potentially play either side of the ball. He's a two-sport star. He's a two-sport star and two-way star. Had more than 1,500 total offensive yards in both seasons, or something ridiculous like that. District MVP, was a utility player of the year, All-State defensive back as a sophomore. Just absolutely ridiculous athlete. But getting the rare decommit recommit from a guy who Texas really wanted to have in the fold on either side of the ball.
Yeah, I think if not our first, one of our very first in the 24 class originally. So good to see him back in the fold. I mean, a guy named Bubba Hampton needs to play at the University of Texas. That's just, I mean, that guy, a player named Bubba Hampton, could have been on any roster from 1945 all the way through. That's just as University of Texas name as it gets. I wouldn't be surprised if we had three guys in the Hall of Honor with that name. But no, he's excited to have him back in the fold. Jordan Washington, like, I think the type of recruit that's getting a little bit slept on, he's a three-star in most publications, a four and just one or two, but he has, I almost think, less than JT Sanders. He reminds me a little bit of an Antonio Gates type, a guy who's a basketball player.
That's high praise.
Oh, well, sure, and not to say, look, he's going to be Antonio Gates, but a basketball player who's lean, who's long, who's, you know, a jump ball catcher. If he can grow into the body, which, you know, they give him a year or two to really grow into it, really become a good blocker, because he's right now he's a jump ball kind of deep ball tracker, can catch, you know, find the space underneath as well, but, you know, as he develops that full range of his game, and I know Coach Banks, who we just spent time praising in the development of JT Sanders, really, really, really loved this kid. Like, it was his eval, his recruitment, his all over it. So I'm choosing to defer and trust, because he's had a real good track record with the position. So excited for both of these guys, you know, but Bubba Hampton, come on. Got to come to Texas. I'm excited. I believe both picked UT over A&M. I think Washington was over Arizona State and A&M, and Hampton had a, I think, ultimately came down to Alabama and Texas. But you know, always good to beat A&M for one commit and Alabama for another. I just wanted to say, which are you more excited about, Gerald, that a guy named Jordan instead of George Washington committed on 4th of July, or that we have a guy named Jordan W somethington who will be on the roster for another 5 years.
I think Washington on 4th of July feels really solid to me. And the fact that, you know what, he is going to be a J-10 on campus. I mean, it's nice. It's nice to have. On the hardwood, Texas got a couple of commitments to the basketball team. One transfer from UCF, combo player Ethiel Horton, 6'5", 200-pound grad transfer from UCF. And then 6'7" wing, Devin Pryor, was an LSU commit for 2024. He flips to Texas and reclassifies to join the team immediately. Like 8 weeks ago or so, we were very curious about what this basketball team was going to be. And now it's seeming like a team that like has a deep tournament run in it if things break the right way.
Like, look, if Chris Beard was out here, like, you know, producing chain smokers hits that just have 70 billion streams on Spotify, which is great. I mean, that's people love those artists, Ed Sheeran level streams with the type of recruits that he had. Neither of them were probably ever going to stick, as they're both playing, you know, professional ball in various leagues. Rodney Terry is the guy who's coming out here and giving you like deep cuts, like, oh, this is a Brazilian funk band, and this is a this is actually, oh, you haven't heard them, they're a Japanese prog rock band that's about to take over. Like, he's grabbing players that are like so kind of specific and so, you know, not really under the radar. I wouldn't say any of these, you know, number of transfers, but oh, I'm gonna go get a 2024 kid who's big in his class, he's already 6'7", like he's ready to play now. Not only flip him for 24, but have him reclassify and take our last roster spot in the 23 class. And I'm going to go get, you know, a sixth-year super senior who transferred once before the transfer portal was a thing to Pitt, had to sit out a year, then transferred his one time to UCF, but now graduated, can grad transfer to get his fourth school in 6 years. A guy with experience who can shoot threes, like can't really shoot twos, but that's okay. He can play great defense and shoot threes. Another steal from Kansas, right? He was supposed to visit Kansas the next day. Always great to do that. This is now UCF, a conference steal, right? That's a now Big 12. Yeah, we'll take it.
It happened after they were announced, right? After
that's
July
correct.
1st.
That's correct.
You're now, sucker.
It just feels right. He got the big man from Virginia, which was, you know, I think, depending on what site you look at, a top five, top three portal player. But then he's gone out and got some kind of curated hits putting this playlist together. I like what he's doing. I think if you doubted Terry at this point, you're probably eating crow or you're probably just very quiet. Your Twitter account is probably less active than it was a few months ago, because I think what a close Rodney Terry has had. And again, when you thought it was over, right, the transfer portal was kind of like, you know, couldn't. The draft came and went. People, you know, were in there. They're not. The portal was pretty much you're in or you're not. He's finding ways to do it creatively, like flipping players from different classes. Like, it's honestly a masterclass. Proud of RT. Love both these guys.
It's like a Sturgill Simpson versus whatever crap they're pumping out of Nashville right now. Is that what you're telling me, Kyle? Like, this
basically
is, like, this is a deep cut for the ones that really want to listen.
Correct.
And enjoy it, right? This is a slow sip bourbon versus something mass produced, right? No, I don't know. We'll see how it works out. If Ole Miss makes a deep run and Texas gets bounced in the first round, then we'll be singing a different tune next year. But until then, they didn't say what culture Chris Beard established. They just said he established a culture. Volleyball, preseason number one for the 13th consecutive year, conspicuously one vote not cast for Texas.
Yeah, I think it's time we stop forcing coaches, when you are that much better than the rest of your conference, to have to vote for somebody else. I do like that you could tell, because you're not allowed to vote for yourself. Jared Elliott, obviously the one who voted for someone else, voted for BYU. Wasn't going to give Baylor that satisfaction. They came in third in the preseason poll, BYU second. But yeah, Texas the clear favorite. Should just put a caveat, Gerald said the 13th consecutive season is the number one. That was in the Big 12, though they could likely be the number one as they were last year preseason overall. This is for the Big 12, 13 years running. Jared Elliott has earned himself the ability to vote for his own team. Just fix the rule.
I mean, yeah, it's silly. It's dumb. It's one of those, like,
you can't be unanimous.
Yeah, you can't be unanimous. There is, like, I am great with teaching sportsmanship to a point, right? But there's like these weird like sportsmanship things that feel super dumb, and this is one of them, right? Like, you shouldn't vote for your own team. It's bad sportsmanship. Whatever, right? I'm better than you all, and I know it. You all know it because y'all voted for me. It's totally fine. Speaking of being better than everyone, Texas trying to get back to it at baseball. And this is the reference that I'm payoff. Just like the post-credit scene from the first Avengers, David Pierce is doing it himself. Taking on the full-time pitching coach role after firing the last two guys, let's just be real about it. He'll be aided by some other folks on the staff, but part of it, you'll see Philip Miller, Steve Rodriguez, and Caleb Longley are going to be assistant coaches. And a name that folks wanted to be the head coach already for some reason and thought he was going elsewhere to be a head coach, Troy Tulowitzki is rejoining the program. He hung out last year but wasn't on staff. And now he's going to be the director of player development. So getting the guys coached up and probably showing his face around some recruiting trips as well.
Yeah, Carly Todd held that position, and she moves over to director of baseball ops. I think this is perfect for a player like, or excuse me, a coach, administrator, whatever, like Tulo, right? He's not beholden to some of the day-to-day activities of the assistant coach, but he can focus, right? He can focus where these players are developing. He can focus on, you know, certain guys. He can focus on working with Jalen Flores as he takes over that shortstop spot, right? Something Tulo did pretty darn well. He can focus on certain guys with, you know, some of their hitting techniques. I really like this. I love that Tulo's back in the fold. I know that there's bright things ahead for him, but this lets him have kind of that zoomed out view a little bit and you know, get a view for the program level. So I like this position for him. I like that he's coming back in. I like that they're keeping Miller Rodriguez and bumping Longley up, who's a guy who's, you know, really interesting character with his CEO of his like sports training company, right? Like, I think MLB teams are using his stuff for training methods, and, you know, a guy who I'm glad that they are able to keep on the staff. I mean, Chris Gordon will be helping. He was on the staff last year, but basically it was announced that he'll be helping Pierce. As Pierce, you know, his head coach, has other duties, he'll be kind of the second in command when it comes to pitching. And he's a guy who's an analytics whiz, came from Duke when Duke had a really incredible team 2 years ago in that pitching room, came over to Texas, was here last year, worked with Woody Williams, but will continue to work with Pierce here, you know, as a second in command. So I like it. Pierce has got to prove it, right? He's can't fire himself in theory. So, you know, the pitching coach will not will not get the blame next year, no matter what happens. Now, will he get the praise if some of the rumors of who might be coming back and who might be coming in are true? Will he get the praise when Texas makes a deep run, if it's Tanner Witt and LBJ back? And you know, we'll talk about a bit on our Thursday show, but after the draft concludes. But who knows? He might be setting himself up for glory.
Yeah, I mean, he's also setting himself up for the Fire Pierce crowd to get even louder, sure. Even though I don't necessarily agree with the reasoning behind it. I think, yes, there have been struggles, but also Texas has routinely been one of the, I don't know, 8 best teams in the country under David Pierce. So outside of maybe 1 year. So there's another conversation to have on another day. But yeah, I think he hasn't really found the right personality, the right development, the right recruiting. And you know what? David Pierce feels like if he's the best person for the job, like, I'm going to trust him until we give or given reason not to. So he's kind of on his third strike here. We'll see how it goes. But ultimately, I think this is going to be a move that he thinks is going to get these guys to the right spot, allow him to focus, and I think allow the rest of his staff to really dive in on their areas. I think it shows a high level of trust in the rest of his assistant coaching and his coaching staff, because you're not going to be able to, if you don't trust the rest of your staff, you're not going to be able to focus as a positional coach like you should.
And you know, Pierce is always focused on the pitchers to some extent. I think it speaks to Coach Rodriguez, right? A guy who came over as a long, long, long time Baylor head coach, and a guy with a lot of experience in the college game, and the same way Sark is adding head coaches, you know, to his fold as advisors of, you know, another mind to bounce it off of. I think letting Rodriguez kind of run with the batters along with Caleb Longley there. You know, I think it makes sense. We'll see. I like it. I'm choosing to be optimistic. Tulo doesn't have to recruit. He can just do what he wants to do. I like all these moves. I like keeping Carly Todd in the fold because I think she's really incredibly good at what she does. I just think it's – I like all of this stuff. It's a lot of baseball right now with the draft. It's a lot of energy around this program. It feels good right now. It does for a team that just barely on a heartbreaking play missed Omaha. I'm finally starting to feel good about Texas baseball again after taking a month to be heartbroken.
Give me another couple of weeks. Now that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, how do you like Threads, the new social media app from Instagram?
I think it's going to shoot itself in its own foot if it doesn't get out of this whole algorithmic homepage rather than a sequential homepage of people I'm following. Mm. But outside of that, I like it conceptually.
Okay. So Threads is here. If you don't follow us, Longhorn Republic is now on Threads. Gerald and I are both on Threads. You should download Threads, and I think the app is called Threads, an app by Instagram or something like that. Search Threads. You'll see it. And follow the show. There's something about it that feels beautifully chaotic, like early stage Twitter. Like there's something about it that feels visceral and raw and feels like 2009 again. Like it just feels like a little bit messy and like I should have to text my tweets in or go to my computer to twitter.com to be able to tweet. Like it just feels a little old school and a little lo-fi and in ways that I kind of like. Gerald's not wrong. There are some things that aren't perfect without a doubt, but anyways, I'll just say that to say, I was on Threads for the biggest, so far, like some of the biggest events in Threads, as it's been an app, are Victor Wembanyama, who everyone on this podcast knows I love, potentially slapping Britney's or having his entourage slap Britney Spears, which is just not the headline I ever thought I would read as a Spurs fan. That all happens in the lead up to the already most hyped NBA debut of all time, Wembanyama in the summer league. It's technically the Vegas league. He skipped the Sacramento piece where a lot of other players were already in their first game, but it was his first game. A crazy Rockets game happens before it. It keeps going ends up being a buzzer beater three-pointer with fouls and reviews, and it takes like 15 minutes where people are like, just put Wemby on, but then they give us a great finish. Feels very March Madness in that way. The game before the one you want to watch ends up being great. And then it's the number one versus number two picks. But there was two other players who stole the spotlight on that night. First was Serge Ibari Rice, who it warmed my heart. Two of my favorite basketball players of you know the past few years, Jabari Rice, who's incredible and is on my Spurs, and that makes me happy, was standing behind Wemby in the tunnel. And so like every shot of Wemby waiting for the Rockets to end also was Serge Ibari tried to look over or around his giant person. And there was one shot in particular, our first thread from the Longhorn Republic Threads account was when Wemby bent over and the camera looked as though it might be focusing. And it's like hotly anticipated debut, and it's Serge Ibari Rice. But anyways, it was Bari, it was Wemby, but really it was Kai. On a day when it was the one versus two, and I won't talk about Alabama's probably not great person who was the number two pick who was playing for those Hornets, the guy who showed out was Kai Jones, right? Like, yeah. An athletic freak, a couple years ahead of Wemby in the development and NBA curve, but he went and got an alley-oop and went over 7'4", 80-something-inch wingspan Victor Wembanyama and threw it down in a SportsCenter top play. He had a couple just like highlight plays where he didn't seem afraid, went after the big man who, you know, will be changing the face of the NBA, obviously. It was fun on that first night when I was tuning in and I was going to watch Wemby to have Longhorns all around, right? Because you had Serge Ibari, who I'm hoping he carves out a nice career, and I hope he does it with the Spurs. But then on the other side, you had Kai Jones. Like for me and my little Longhorn, Spurs-loving basketball heart, it was kind of the perfect way. Wemby didn't have the best night. He went on to have like 27 and 13 in his second game, just absolutely dominated against the Blazers, which is probably more what we expected. But I love that Kai Jones got his moment in the sun and reminded people, hey, before this basketball Frenchman, I was the athletic freak and phenom, you know, who was doing things that people couldn't believe. And there's still plenty of that in the tank for him. So hoping he has an enormous year for those Hornets.
You know, I will always support Kai Jones. He is somebody that I love and I cherish, and I think he's absolutely incredible. And that basketball Frenchman, I think he's going to be fine in spite of what NBA Twitter was going to tell you for like two straight days. I'm banging the drum this week.
Is there, Gerald, is there a Bahamas-Barbados rivalry? Do you just love Kai Jones from the islands as though it was your own?
I don't think so. I mean, it's hard for me to judge because my grandma was just weird and had weird prejudices against people from other islands, but that's another conversation for another day. My dad loves everybody, so like it's really hard for me to judge. It's either Fair enough. Hates everybody for no reason or loves everybody, so I don't know if there's Fair actually enough. A thing going on. I just like Kai Jones because I think he's cool. So I'm Fair banging enough. The drum this week on Pat Fitzgerald and whatever the heck is going on at Northwestern. So, basically what happened, the reports of hazing and or hazing of a sexual nature and a toxic environment, later racist and encouraging racism. Earlier, Pat Fitzgerald had been earlier suspended for 2 weeks pending the investigation, but following additional reports and honestly greater levels of national scrutiny thanks to reporting from the Northwestern campus newspaper, Pat Fitzgerald was fired on Monday evening. It's going to be a fun legal battle because apparently they had an agreement about it, and now they change that agreement, and there's going to be all sorts of fun legal things happening. I'm very excited to see what discovery looks like for this, what evidence is going to be brought out for this civil case, especially because they did fire him with cause. There are two things I want to say, and one's pretty simple. Like, hazing and bullying is stupid. Don't do it. Like, and don't encourage your kids to do it, or don't. Like, it's not part of, it doesn't have to be part of the culture if we don't let it be. There are kids that are killing themselves because of things like this. There's a high school player that his parents forced him to toughen up and go back to baseball because hazing's just part of it, and the kid killed himself. So like, don't do that. But also, I want to really bang the drum on the importance of student journalism and local journalism, because I think this doesn't happen. This doesn't come to light without the work of the student journalists. That when there's, you know, SPJ says don't call them that when you're credentialing them, but like, as two former students who were also unpaid journalists, like I wear it as a badge of honor. I was unpaid, rubbing shoulders with guys from ESPN and from all the big locals and from all of that, reporting on the University of Texas and the Texas basketball team, and I was at, you know, press conferences and those types of things. Like, I don't, it's not a pejorative to me, but these students who are journalists did really incredible, really tough investigative work and cracked it absolutely wide open. And the value of, especially on a day where the New York Times announced that they're basically going to start cutting their local sports coverage and just bringing over articles from The Athletic, it underlies and belies what has happened and what shouldn't be happening to local journalism, especially sports journalism. I think there's a great value in that. We think of it as, you know, they'll talk about games, and we've sacrificed good journalism for takes and opinions, but that's another conversation for another day. But like, all in all, this is what journalism can and should be, and why I will forever support local journalists. And especially student journalists. And I'll say it like that. I love student journalism. I love student media. It is a big part of my story and why I'm talking into a microphone today. So big ups to all of the students and all the student journalists out there who are doing good work, incredible work, and doing it with worse resources, terrible cameras, bad computers that are outdated, schools that are trying to cut your budget, schools that are trying to exhibit institutional control over you, and still doing incredible work. Big ups to you. You all are my heroes. Keep doing it. And I'm so freaking proud of you, kids.
Man, that's a great take. I love that. You nailed it, because the part that's important, it sucks. Pat Fitzgerald, that's dumb. I hate it. But yeah, the part that to be optimistic about is there's still kids out there doing this, doing it well. I think I saw the saying that they what did the guy say in that tweet you quoted? Something about the vulnerable, and I really liked what he said. Give me one second.
Comforted the afflicted and...
afflicted the comfortable.
And afflicted the comfortable.
Yeah, I heard the quote, comforted the afflicted and afflicted the comfortable, which I think is just phenomenal.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, as a former journalist, Gerald is, you know, between this podcast, you have a student media, you know, sports director, play-by-play, you know, we have a Texas student media board of trustee member. I sat on a board, had the honor to look at the business side of student media while I was in college. You know, Gerald and I have benefited from this. We got to cut our teeth. We got to make our mistakes. We got to get, you know, hopefully we're good at this as we do it today. A lot of it. Yeah. I mean, I got to elbow Kirk Bowles out of the way to ask Avery Bradley a question after a basketball game. You know, I got to ask Greg Popovich a question once. Like, these types of things, like, I shouldn't have been able to. I was scared in all these cases, but it made me better at whatever job, but certainly the Big J journalism stuff, and it matters. And the fact that they did it right and they handled something so sensitive and did it justice and did it correctly and you know, came through. Obviously, Medill is an incredible journalism school, so is the University of Texas. So support student journalists, support the Daily Texan, Texan student media, J school students, give them opportunities, give them internships, pay them to do internships. Let this be profession for the next generation. It matters. It really does.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow me on Threads at Kyle Carpenter. You can follow the Texas Pregamer on Twitter at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter and Threads at GH Goodrich. I don't know why we're saying that. I don't think Threads is going to last. Follow me on
the newest. It's here to stay, baby.
I don't know. Billionaires being billionaires, whatever. Follow me. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod, Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Email's not going anywhere. Thank you so much for tuning in again. We'll be back on Thursday. And until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Don't forget, our Threads is also at Longhorn Republic. Follow us everywhere.